Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Kinda Funny Screencast Special WWE WrestleMania Ranked. I'm Greg, that's Sam, that's Mike, that's Tim, and on our way to the granddaddy of them all, we have asked a member of the wrestling world to come in, pick a WrestleMania match for us each and every week to rank and review before we get to Philadelphia in April. If you love what we do, please support us with the Kinda Funny membership on Patreon or YouTube to get all of our shows ad-free, watch us record them live, and get a daily exclusive show. You can get the Kinda Funny screencast for free with ads and without the exclusive content on YouTube and podcast services around the globe. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Carl Jacobs, Kishan Patel, Nathan Lamoth, Karen Linder, James Hastings, Casey Andrew. But before we go any further, Sam Roberts, ladies and gentlemen. Not Sam Wrestling, Raw Talk, The Bump, you name it. This guy's doing it in the wrestling world. And I do say, my favorite podcast, Not Sam Wrestling, I listen to each and every week. I'm always excited. Sam, it's a pleasure to work with you finally.
Yeah, I'm so glad to see you, man. And I really appreciate all the love you give to the podcast. It really it means a lot. You know, as I'm sure you can relate to, sometimes sitting in your basement for 90 minutes at a time to talk about wrestling, you need that outside reward sometimes. Something to let people know that this is worth
it. It's worth it. Yeah, it's worth it. No, I think, you know, that was the thing about it for me when I started listening regularly was just the, and I think this is coming from somebody who podcasts a lot. I don't know where it is on the scale, but for how many hours I do a day, the fact that you work alone boggles my mind because it is such a great conversation with me while I don't speak back to you. You know what I mean? I'm in my car nodding. I'm disagreeing. I'm ready for you to drop the rules. But the fact that you just go and you have such a encyclopedic knowledge of everything that's happening, it's insane, dude. You are a treasure to this world of wrestling.
Come on, I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Not Sam Wrestling, of course, the show. Go listen to it. If you're going to WrestleMania, if you're going to Philadelphia, you have a live show on Wednesday, don't you?
Yes, Wednesday at 8 p.m. at the Helium Comedy Club. We're doing a Not Sam Wrestling live. You can get tickets at notsam.com.
Love it. And of course, congratulations on the new child. You're a very busy man.
Thank you for that, too. That's also a very good use of a lot of my time.
I feel like a lot of things have come together for you at the same moment. You know what I mean? You're doing this, you're Raw Talking, you're bumping, you're over there, you got the live shows, there, and then also no big deal. Oh, but you're gonna go host Busted Open, and you're gonna do this, and blah, blah, blah. It's just you're the busiest man in the business right now.
Look, it's not always planned that way, but when you fear for your career as much as I do, you can't say no, can you?
You cannot. Not in this day and age, as this year continues to teach everyone. Nope. I digress. The reason we have jobs, of course, is because of our sponsors. Thank you to Shady Rays, WWE 2K24, Factor. But for right now, let's tell you how we got here. This is where they play the video, Kevin.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dino Zucconi, and I am the lead designer of the Showcase mode on WWE 2K24, which, of course, contains this year's Showcase of the Immortals, where we're covering all of WrestleMania's greatest moments and matches. And I hear that's kind of the theme right now. We're talking about our favorite WrestleMania matches. And for me, there is no question, WrestleMania 13, Bret the Hitman Hart, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Ken Shamrock is your special guest referee, submission match. The fire between these two could not be contained. Months-long rivalry, Bret Hart coming back, spurning Shawn Michaels in favor of taking on the best wrestler in the company, Steve Austin. And after a classic of the Survivor Series in 1996 and some more fire between them at Royal Rumble and Final Four, it was time to settle this score. One of the most famous finishes, you have your double turn, Bret Hart's making his fans mad, Steve Austin's gaining them because he will not give up. But that doesn't mean he's going to come out with that victory now, does it? It is, in my opinion, the greatest match of all time, let alone a WrestleMania great match. It's the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Bret the Hitman Hart taking on Stone Cold Steve Austin, WrestleMania 13.
Thank you, Dino. Let's go back to WrestleMania 13 live from Rosemont, Illinois, when it was still the Rosemont Horizon, as God intended, all right? Yeah. As it was when I saw August 9th, 1999, change my life, Chris Jericho at the Rosemont Horizon before it became the Allstate Arena. Of course, this was March 23rd, 1997, in front of 8,197 fans.
Say that again?
8,197.
A lot of context there. You know, like the last couple weeks, we're talking about these numbers that are like getting up there into the many, 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 many more than 8,000, but didn't feel like it wasn't that many people.
Right? Well, Chicago, come on, the best audience in the business. Let's not lie.
So you were not at the Smash, Greg?
No. I jotted this down in my notes. What's interesting about this is still during my blackout period where I had gone from, you know, being the young kid, Hogan, all that jazz, Papa Shango, you know what I mean? And then I took my sabbatical. And then I come back almost 1 year later. My first time returning to WWF programming at the time was March 30th, 1998. This was Raw, and of course, it's notable because it's, okay, here comes X-Pac, and he's going to come join DX, and then Road Dogg and Billy Gunn at the end joining DX after Shawn had left. But it was that thing of going to high school and having people tell me, no, wrestling's great. You should watch wrestling. Oh, okay. And I picked it back up there, and so I was off to the races there. It's also notable
I was going to say I'm tolerant of everybody having a Rumspringa. Like, yeah. The Amish get to go away and see if they're really going to come back. Wrestling fans, same thing.
Yeah, of course. You got to go out there, stretch your legs, see if there's anything else, maybe a musical instrument that'll fill the gap. No, I just got to see people hit each other with chairs. That's where I'm coming back
absolutely.
To.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also of note, right, I think, because this is such a formative match, right, in terms of the history of the WWE, in the history of Stone Cold Steve Austin, it's also worth pointing out, I think, especially for Mike, because, of course, learning about all of this as we go, is he's a new wrestling fan. So this is March 23rd, 1997. That means it's less than a year since the debut of Austin 316, where Stone Cold really like went and started going. That was June 23rd, 1996. Sam, did you ever have a Rumspringer? Did you ever walk away, or were you always locked in on WWE?
No, I was born Amish and I stayed Amish. My faith stayed strong. My morals stayed righteous. And while I accept that others need to go on whatever path they went on, I never strayed.
I appreciate that. I love that. So then what was your takeaway? I mean, at a top level, when I assume you were watching this live.
Yes. I mean, this is such a fascinating match because part of it is in the buildup to it. Like, you have to understand that Bret Hart had been the sort of prototypical picture of goodness, and not phony goodness, not like goodness that you couldn't achieve, like Superman level goodness. I mean, like a good human being that played by the rules, worked harder than everybody else, and it may take him longer to get there, but he would always get. He went away. He comes back in November of 96, and it's the old Bret Hart, but WWE is already starting to change. And you see, basically, from around December 96, January 97, up until this WrestleMania, this character is dealing with the fact that his brand of goodness is no longer what the audience wants. So while he hasn't changed, the audience has, and now he's become frustrated with the fans and the way they're not responding to the same things that they used to respond to.
For sure. So then, Mike.
Sam's a storyteller.
Oh, yeah. I'm listening to this podcast. You got me listening to this podcast.
Him and Dino, they set the stage right here. Yeah. Better than the hype package. But the hype package set the stage, too.
Yeah. Well, that's a great way. Let's jump into the hype package then, Mike. This is, I wrote down, I'm like, it's a good setup, but such a product of its time.
Yes.
As soon as Todd Pettengill opened his mouth, I was like, oh, my God, Todd. Right. I forgot.
Yeah, I think that's the wild one for me as being the newbie into this, right? Like, this is the furthest back we've ventured so far. So getting to see the different time periods and what they were producing at the time has always been a wow factor to me of when we see the Kofi versus Daniel Bryan, it's like, oh, okay, this is what it looked like just a couple years ago. Now we go way back to the 90s. It is It's a little jarring. It's a little jarring. Yeah. But they set the stage, right? He wants his respect. He feels like he's been betrayed. He's been left behind. And now Stone Cold's the hot guy on the block. And I felt that. I could see that through the hype package of, okay, I understand the stage that this guy, he's returned and he wants his due, but they're not giving it to him. And so I'm interested to see where the Stone Cold character takes off. Of course, I did have to go look up Stone Cold 316 afterwards to see what it's all about. But I didn't get to know why. Okay, Stone Cold's hot on the block, I guess. All right. My biggest one, just a side note, is the craziest scene was when he gets in the car and there's a man walking with a child and it looks like he's about to hit the child. And you're like, oh, man, this is insane. I can't watch this. So, yeah, the hype package set the stage, but Sam and Dino did a much better job setting that up for me.
Yeah. Tim, you're the master of hype. What did you think looking back at this 90s hype act?
I mean, it's funny how I think this is easily the closest I've been to Mike on the show so far, because I got my start with WrestleMania 20. From there, fell in love, was then able to go back and look at some of the highlights. Of course, we have the Rock Hogan and a couple of the WrestleMania 17, 18, 19. I saw the TLC match at 17 in its entirety. I saw a whole smattering of different matches going forward. But I think last night watching this is when I realized I don't think I've ever seen a full match before that. So this definitely was like a different time, a different place. And I kind of got to say, I mean, I know we're talking about one of the best of all time. It lives up. Like, there's, you strip away the LED walls, you strip away all of the crazy hype and everything. And like, they did what they could with this. And somehow it was even more. It was so spectacular looking at the hype package. I'm of two minds with it. Cause on one hand, I'm like, is this actually the greatest thing of all time? Is this a perfect hype package? Or is this what they all were like back then? And that's something I need you guys to kind of let me know, because like, I think at the end of the day, I'm going like a 4 out of 5 on this one, because I do think it did a good job of me not knowing where these characters are at. I think it set the stage. I understood the stakes at play. The good guy, bad guy mentality, the older dog, the new dog, all that stuff, I get it. But back then, was every single hype package VO with the like super old timey type footage and all of that?
There were a lot like that, right, Sam? I remember quite a few like that. Again, to have Todd Pettengill narrating it, right, as it cuts in and out, I thought that was an interesting way of storytelling versus what we've seen before, where really it is the wrestlers cutting their promos and the clips of that tell the story for it.
Yeah, I liked the VO. Like, yeah. I think it really worked. And like, to me, that felt unique and it felt so different than anything I've ever seen that I'm like, oh man, this hype package really worked for me. But if they did that all the time, maybe less so.
Sam, what's your take on it?
Well, yeah, I don't think they really did. And they didn't do it like this because most of the stories didn't have this many layers. Like this is sort of that beginning. I think if you go to like SummerSlam 97 and the sort of story between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and The Undertaker, that's probably where you're going to get some more VO and you're going into stories that have a few more layers than what we as wrestling fans were used to at the time. You know, I also look at it with this glorious view of nostalgia you look at it differently when you remember getting hyped in real time by the package. But I thought it does an excellent job. And this is one of the things that WWE did that really stood out and I think helped them eventually beat Nitro and become this powerhouse, is their production value and the stories that they told. So like, I would watch these pay-per-views with my dad. My dad hated wrestling, except when a hype package like this would come on, all of a sudden I could tell whether he would admit it or not, he was invested.
Sure.
And that's when you know you've got an effective package. And I've always said, my package is among the most effective.
No, I think they do. That's my thing. I say it's a 4 out of 5. I think it's great on the Kind of Funny scale, right? I think it's like, does a great job of the setup of it, of the 6 months gone, its comeback. I think the tracks they put underneath it musically are not great, but it's a product of its time and I'm not taking it.
I mean, not to cut you off, I disagree entirely. I think it's perfect. Like, it's, there's something so special about that sound style, like the quality of the music itself, where it's choir and orchestra, but it's not a real orchestra. It feels like PlayStation 1 music, and like, you know, going to, on the video game side of things, hearing songs from Final Fantasy 7 and then hearing those same songs in Final Fantasy 7 Remake, it kind of has that vibe. And there is such a quality to it that it's like, look, quality is one thing, but the composition of it, the music teams they had working back then knew exactly how to pull at the heartstrings and like get an emotion out of you. And like, you see that graphics package with the lower thirds and even the WWF logo, like how it looked, and it's all a little shaky. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
oh my
God.
I think that the sound of it was exactly what it needed to be.
I think you say, you know, talking about it as a package overall, right? And what it does and the emotions it elicits. It does that, right? Like even Todd Pego will be like a false prophet, he spews forth his rhetoric. I'm like, all right, yeah. But it's like crazy to watch this and get the setup for where the match is going to go and then get there and see how clearly McMahon, everybody's pushing that like Austin is the thing. Like mm-hmm. this is what it is and how tough he is and strong it is. But even at this of like, you know, you scratch my back, I'll stab yours. And they show the sign of like Bret Hart makes me puke. And it's just like Austin has changed the fans. It was like, damn, like, you know, again, a product out of time.
You don't understand as a wrestling fan. So, you know, I probably would have been like 12, 13 years old. And when Stone Cold Steve Austin shows up on television and he says, if you put the letter S in front of the word hitman, you have my exact opinion on Bret Hart. Mind blowing. It wasn't happening on wrestling. Like yeah. He just called him that on television. It wasn't happening. It was a cartoon show before then.
Yeah.
And now you've got this real guy from Texas who's figuring out ways to curse on TV. It was the coolest thing in the world.
So, Sam Roberts, what's your score out of five on this package?
I think 4 out of 5 is fair. You know, I don't think it's absolutely perfect, but it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Mike, gotta get
4 out of 5 for me as well.
Wow, 4 out of 5 yeah. is across the board. I like that quite a bit. Okay. Well, then let's move on to the entrances. Mike Howard, want to kick me off?
This was fun. I mean, kicking off with Ken Shamrock, who is absolutely
yoked out of his mind.
It's insane. He's bigger than the both of them. He's so yacked. It's unbelievable. But it was fun to see. So far, we haven't had a submission match. We haven't had a guest referee. So it's like, oh, here's a different style of match. This is exciting. And to get Ken Shamrock at the time, them talking about, oh, he could fight. He might be one of the best there ever was. It's like, oh, that's fun. And then the glass breaks. And it's like, oh, there's the iconic music. And this man walks out like he's a gosh darn pit bull. Stone Cold is the scariest dude in the entrance. And it's cool. And people are up for it. And I'm excited about it. Of like, oh, man. Look at Stone Cold come out. I know him well from my previous years. This is exciting. And then Bret the Hitman Hart to, man, watch out for all the glass. He's got to step over the glass. And he's coming in and people are still cheering. I love the fan interaction of giving them the glasses. Yeah, I thought that was one of those cool moments we see now with like Cody Rhodes all the time of like, oh, he was the good guy, like Sam said. He was this dude trying to be there. And then we immediately get into it, which is what I love the most of like, the entrances are great, but the jump right into the match, I that sealed it for me. I was like, oh, I like this a lot.
What are you giving your entrances then?
4 out of 5. Yeah, this was fun.
See, for me, I went 3. Okay. I think it's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. It's definitely a product of its time again. But like what I think is telling is anytime you watch the glass break from WrestleMania 13 in any hype package, anything they put together now, they line the music up with the glass breaking. It was very weird and obtuse, I thought, to start us backstage. And like, I don't get the pop of the crowd, even though even when he comes out, it's not like what a glass break is now. But then to get there and then the glass breaks, I was like, oh man, should have lined that one up. That would have been cooler. And I love throughout both these entrances that, like, again, how different it was back in the 90s. You can just see the curtain pulled, and it's not even pulled well. There's like people walking and standing back in gorilla just doing it, whatever. It's like outrageous. But again, for that vibe, for that feel, for, you know, the Rosemont Horizon to be there and have that audience there. And again, something I thought was so interesting was listening to the crowd and how they dealt with it, right? Because it is, I think, this is always the match people point to of Austin going super over, right? Going into the superstardom of flipping the audience, really, if you weren't even his fan yet, going that way. And you hear that here, where Austin, he comes out to a mixed reaction. Bret comes out to a louder, but still mixed reaction as well. It's a weird one when people don't have their footing.
Yep.
And that's a fascinating thing to watch as the story unfolds from here on out. But yeah, loved that. I put in here, I love this camera up they do in Austin's face, where at one point he walks in and they bring the camera right up into him. And I'm like, oh, that was really nice. I like the pyro for Bret, and I did feel the crowd was louder for him. But yeah, I say 3 out of 5. It was good. It set the expectations, but whatever.
I'm right there with you, Greg. 3 out of 5 for me on this one, for many of the reasons you said, specifically the glass not lining up with the sound effect of the song. What a missed opportunity. Truly don't understand why they would have done that. But do I love the physical glass breaking? Absolutely.
Amazing.
That's what WrestleMania is all about. Like, let's, what are the fun things we can do that are unique to these wrestlers to like really up the ante from what we're used to? I thought that was incredible. The camera shot down for Bret Hart of the little sparklers in the rafters up there. It's what they had at the time. I appreciate it though. You know, somebody thought we're going to start up here, have the camera come down as we see him come through this hilarious little tunnel with the LED strips around it. Or back then they probably weren't even LED strips, but I just appreciate the craftsmanship put into the set here, which is a different type of craft than we get these days. This was like looking back watching Star Wars A New Hope versus, you know, Force Awakens. And I love that. I think that there's so much love and care put into that stuff. But the bigger reason for me for the 3 out of 5, the audio levels are just wrong.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like even in the arena, the music was at like a 6 and it should have been at a 10. So it just was kind of hard, I think, for me at home to get into it, but then also for the other people, because we're talking about Stone Cold's theme. You know what I mean? Like, that theme means a lot to me. Bret Hart's, not so much. But Bret Hart is one of those legends that I am just unfamiliar with. So if his music hit, I wouldn't even know it's his.
Like, wow.
That's crazy.
You know, stab you in the ear.
Yeah, wow. And then, like, that's just where my place and time is in this whole adventure. But the entrances I thought were they could have been better, but I really appreciate what they tried to do. Him having to walk over the glass and all that stuff, him coming in second, all that, like, I think was very, very, very well done. But there was too many like, oh, why didn't they do this? And I just wish it was like more powerful sounding.
Sam.
I'm going to go 4 out of 5. Okay. For a couple of reasons. Like, I'm very forgiving of the technology because, again, this is WrestleMania 13. Like, financially, the WWE is not where they need to be. They're on an uptick, but they're not in the best shape in the world. They're just starting this thing. And really, I would argue that around that time, Bret's music probably would have gotten a bigger pop than Austin's music because it just hadn't been established yet. He wasn't that guy yet. And you could hear it, like Greg was saying, in the mixed reactions. That's why for me, I give it a 4 out of 5, because what I look at is like more the controllable and the stories that the body language tells as these two guys walk to the ring. I think there's something so cool about seeing Stone Cold Steve Austin in an era when he's actually proving himself, you know, when he's actually hungry. This is the biggest match of his entire career. And every fiber of his being is telling this story of the guy who might be on in the middle of the card, but to him, that might as well be the main event of WrestleMania. He is going out there to beat a legend and to take his spot at the top of the WWE. And then you have Bret Hart, who you both brought it up, selling the glass. Nobody ever would do that. Only Bret Hart would sell the fact that that glass had shattered on the ground and that he had to avoid that. I also love that Bret, like, it's so, the subtleties in him are so good because he still kind of does have a little of that bitterness, a little of that, like, I don't like the position that I'm in, but he's not selling it all the way because he knows the end of the match, that's when he needs people to boo him.
Yeah.
Which means he's got a hint at that, and he does in the entrance, but he still is that good guy, gives his glasses away, you know, is that hero. So that way, when the breaking point comes later, it's a true breaking point.
What do you got?
It's just so hype when Sam talks about it.
It's like, God damn it, Sam.
It's so hype, y'all.
We can just listen to the podcast. So 4 is from Sam and Mike, 3 is from Tim and Greg. But Sam Roberts, why don't you walk us through your thoughts on the match itself?
Oh, I mean, it's better than Shakespeare, honestly. Like, I don't know. Everybody hypes up Bill Shakespeare and all these stories that he told. This is maybe the best told in-ring story ever. Like, you got to understand, Bret Hart is a submission expert. Every big match he's ever had, he won with a submission move. Stone Cold Steve Austin was never selected to be in the role of main event guy for any company. Bret Hart already had been. Stone Cold Steve Austin had no submission moves. Bret Hart was the master of the sharpshooter. So Austin's back is up against the wall. And the only story to tell is that he's simply too tough to beat. That he I don't know how he's going to win the match, but I simply can't see him losing. And watching Brett get progressively more and more frustrated, progressively more and more aggressive, to the point where it's not about competition anymore. It's not about sport anymore. It's about being bothered that this guy won't be beaten. You know, when he locks that sharpshooter or the figure four around the corner
post. Oh,
yes. And it's like, what's he doing? That's unnecessary. He doesn't need, well, he's doing whatever he can to win. And then of course going all the way to the end. But I like, it's funny. Cause like you watch this and for me, I'm almost like, I really could have done without Ken Shamrock being in there as big of a component in the match as he is. I'm so transfixed by this story that's being told.
Yeah.
That I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that is the world's most dangerous man.
That's one of the things that's interesting about it. Well, two things you said there. The submission matchness of it is something I think the hype package missed. I could have gone for a why we were doing this. Why I'm well versed in Bret Hart, so I know the sharpshooter. But I could have done with whatever promo segment was of like it's a submission match because you could never like. I feel like that I gets driven home in the match after the match starts, which I felt was a weird one. Mike, you're new to all this. Yeah. Did I catch you off guard?
Oh yeah, 100%. Right. I've heard of the sharpshooter. I didn't know that was his signature move. I didn't. Like I said, didn't even know it was a submission match until they said it when Ken Shamrock was in the ring. So, yeah. I could have used a lot of that.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, obviously, I know where Ken Shamrock's going, right? I'm going to snap. Like, we're going to have some good times with Ken Shamrock down the road here of the Attitude Era. But I liked him here. And I liked him, first off, for being an imposing figure. Great. I like that when they get into the crowd, he's actively holding the crowd back with the security. I'm like, that's pretty dope. Like, you don't see guest referees do that often. And then I think he may ask, do you give up a few too many times? Just about any time anything happens. Steve, Brett, you know what I mean? Like, all right, we get it. But I enjoyed his inclusion in it. I thought that went a long way to doing it. Tim, I'm very anxious to hear you talk about this match.
Oh, I mean, it's a 5 out of 5. Like, yes, this is storytelling and wrestling at its absolute best. I was blown away by this, man. I've been hyped on this match forever. I've seen the end of this match many times.
Print out t-shirts.
I've never seen the full match. And I just can't believe how much they fit into one. I don't know how long this was. It could have been 3 hours. It could have been 15 minutes. I was just in it, and it just felt like that's all that reality was, man. The special guest referee, I am unfamiliar with Ken Shamrock. I don't know his deal at all. So when he popped in, I was like, why? Like, what is this? Like, what? Why do we need this? What's the point? And I'm with everything you said about him right there. I'm happy he was a part of this because he was able to dictate the crowd control section and make it feel so special and real. Like, we don't see that nowadays, probably for good reason. We might see The Miz get into some shit with Shane McMahon or whatever, like out there. They're like, they're wrestling the crowd, but it always kind of feels like a very controlled segment. It feels like, oh, they go out there, they're going to do this spot, maybe go there, do this spot. This felt like anything can happen. We see Stone Cold looking around for things to grab, to hit him with, and it felt so organic. And to have the guest ref have to be a physical presence in that grounds it, makes it feel so real. Again, the lack of LEDs, the lack of everything, it felt like a just street fight that was going on. And for it to be a submission match, oh my God, the stakes are so much higher. You get there and you're just like, oh, there's not going to be the 1-2 who's here today. All right.
Yeah.
They are going to try to make the other person tap out to make them quit. I love the amount of times they were saying quit. You know, like, this is like, do you quit? This, like, somebody has to quit for this to end. And I just love the storytelling there and the brutalness of so much of it. You guys talked about the figure four on the outside of the ring post. Like, holy crap. I know I've seen things like that. It feels like I've never seen anything like that. That took things up a notch that I just didn't expect. And I've seen the end of Stone Cold being busted open and, you know, not giving up. He doesn't quit. He doesn't tap out. What the hell? That is like the coolest. And we'll talk about the ending later, but like, that is such a cool moment for this character to become larger than life and have this moment when at the end of the day, he is just kind of this giant toddler walking around, you know, flicking people off. And like, Stone Cold's just so funny looking the way he moves. And halfway through the match, seeing him charge up and start doing the little, like, all that stuff. Oh, the momentum shift is just, it is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. The blood, not my favorite thing. I think it went a little too far.
Yeah.
And I know that's a sign of the times of the era. But even then, like hearing the commentary, they're kind of like, whoa, this is going too far.
Well, yeah. Again, the finish we'll talk about. But when Vince is like, you know, maybe we shouldn't have shown that. I was like, damn, dude.
Yeah. And that's the thing. This is wrestling. I don't know what's planned, what's real, what's not. And I was watching this with my fiance, and she's never been this involved in a match, just in the sense of like watching it, just being like especially towards the end. She screams out. She's just like, leave that man alone. Like, she was just so upset at it. And like, that's professional wrestling, where we know what it is, but you still believe that there's something more going on.
Yeah,
there might be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. You know, this was a big moment of growth for me. Because, of course, when I try to get Jen excited about wrestling, I jump to the things that excite me, which are often, you know, Foley being thrown off the top of Hell in the Cell, watch this Dark Side of the Ring about something horrible, and it doesn't go well. And so, like, I caught myself in my throat last night being like, I have to, and I'm like, you know what? This is not a match you need to watch. Forget it. I definitely don't want you to see this. Yeah, I mean, what can you say about a match that is in the Hall of Fame for so many people? It's in WWE 2K24's 40 years WrestleMania mode, right? Because it's that important in terms of storytelling, the company, these characters, you name it, you go for it. You know, I to echo what you guys have said and talked about, like, it's, again, I join a year later, right? And Austin's already Austin. He's already fucking tearing shit up, and I'll see him on Raw do that over and over again. It's crazy now with my memories and the clips and everything else, to come back and, again, like you said, Sam, see a hungry Stone Cold, to see a Stone Cold who hasn't been plagued by injuries yet and isn't getting older and is still very much limber, getting tossed around there, lean, you know, his whole look to it. And, like, you know, when they brawl into there and he takes a fucking backdrop on the stairs that we can't see at all.
Oh, my God.
I mean, like, what a traditional, again, Chicago crowd. I remember, once I get going, like, I interrupt Taz's fucking hardcore championship match at one point. You see me in the background because we were all so obsessed and wild. We didn't give a crap. We're going to get there and tear it up. And, like, the audience, like, you're scared for them. You see the Rosemont Horizon security guards in their jackets, and it's like, damn, they are just going at it out there.
Yeah, and, like, even just seeing the way that the barricades,
yeah,
you can even call them that, around the ring. They're like 2 feet away from the ring, and they're just like, just a small little kind of fence, maybe.
Yeah.
When they get thrown out of the ring, there's these like 5-year-old kids there, like they can rush.
So good.
You know, and they're outside, like going up the stairs. Like you're saying, you can't even really tell they're going upstairs because you just see a sea of people. You don't even see the big spot sometimes. You see guys just like grabbing them, trying to touch their hair and stuff. And I'm like, what is going on here?
It was such a good moment where the guy was trying to high five Stone Cold Steve Austin, and of course they're not having any of that, and just starts petting Bret the Hitman's heart's heads because he's just excited and jacked up to be there. There's another moment where they're at the hockey guardrail and the man's just eating his nachos, and Stone Cold's banging the man's face off the front of it, and he's like, I'm just trying. And then Stone Cold again sees a man selling hot dogs, tries to grab the plate from him to beat him.
Yeah, he grabs the soda out of the dude's soda thing, drinks it, and then slams it into his head.
Oh, yeah, that's what I wrote down for this match. Is it was just mayhem, right? As a first time watcher, this match kicks off and we start moving, and then all of a sudden we are outside before you even know it. We are battling through the crowd, and yeah, you guys said it, Ken Shamrock was great. He sold a lot of fun of backing people up, freaking out, screaming all the time. It was a really good time. And then to get back into the ring and just have some of the spots, I mean, beating up on Stone Cold's leg, right? As someone who doesn't know Stone Cold at a young age, right, he's got a knee brace on, and this man's attacking his knee, and Stone Cold sells it where there's a line here where I don't know what's real and fake, and he's hobbling, and I go, man, how much pain is this man in? What kind of damage are we doing? And then we get to the bloody spots, and I go to myself, how did he cut himself? How did he get blood? I need to know this. So I'm going to ask you guys in just a second, but there was one more spot of the chair and the brutality of Stone Cold, of getting the swing to his side and him taking the chair over his head and hitting him. It's really hard. It's like, man, you can feel the power coming out of that. And they kick it over to Bret the Hitman Hart's daughter, who's doing this. Yeah. And commentary was electric on this. I got to shout out
the commentary. And again, all they're doing is shitting all over Bret Hart and putting over Steve, which I get, but you know what I mean? I'm right there. Go for it.
Commentary was fantastic. Into the Boston Crab, and I'm going, oh man, is he going to submit him? Check him out. He's got him right now. This is the moment. And yeah, now we go outside the stage, and I have to ask you guys, of like, how does this work? How does this man cut his head so hard like that? Because, yeah, I'm very much with Tim. This was too much, right? As someone, I think in the newer era of WWE, you don't see that much blood. We really try to keep that away. And it just felt just one step too high on the blood factor for me, especially if you watch the end of the night where they just keep the mat there and they're just wrestling on that mat. It's insane. But who cuts him? How does he get cut? I need to know the background story.
He blades.
But, like, there's this moment where he gets thrown into the guardrail, and there's a man there up in the front. And I don't want to say he's a plant, but, like, he is kind of close, and he's not moving, and he looks like he's doing this, but they pan away so fast because he's clearly doing it that they don't want to show me, but I don't understand how it's actually physically happening.
Okay. Well, Sam, I know in general, obviously how we blade and things like that. Do you know the story behind this incident?
If I'm not, and I'd have to look it up, and so don't hold me, but I think Brett might have bladed Steve on this one.
Okay.
I think, you know, and so Brett, there were multiple times in big matches where Brett was an advocate of blood helping to tell that story. Like, if you go back to the match he had with Roddy Piper at WrestleMania 8, it was another bloody affair because there was a lot of backstory going in, and it's like that's what he felt was needed to bring it over the top. Unless I'm thinking of a different match, I believe that the blood was Brett's idea, and Austin was like, we don't blade. Like, we're not supposed to. And Brett was like, then let me do it. And I think that Austin has said that Brett is the only guy he would trust to do that to him. Now, look, the thing about blading is it's not an exact science. You know what I mean? But, when you take a little piece of a razor blade and cut yourself or somebody cuts you on the forehead, you can't determine whether you're going to get a few drops or buckets of blood tearing down. And I mean, I think once Austin was in the sharpshooter, you could kind of see that when he realized what was happening and that the blood was streaming down his face, he is pushing hard. You know what I mean? He's got like when he's tensing up every muscle and blood vessel in his face just so as much can come pouring down as humanly possible. And it's interesting because was it a bit much? Like, it's wild to look at in today's context. But this ended up being it was the cover of a magazine.
It was a t-shirt, remember? T-shirt. Blood from a stone.
Wow, I mean, awesome.
It was a t-shirt that was so successful that, like, bootleggers on the internet made a version of it for Becky Lynch when Becky bled as the man. Like, it was not just a t-shirt. For a while, the blood from a stone shirt was the shirt.
Tim, you had a question?
I just have a question just about, like, the blading and all this stuff, because I know that wrestlers have done it. But, like, I feel like, from my knowledge, again, WrestleMania 20 era, like, it was definitely, like, frowned upon, and it felt like that was not part of the storytelling. And I do remember Eddie Guerrero had some moments, and Shawn Michaels, like, if he got busted open, no matter what the hell he did, and his hair would just be covered in blood. But, like, during this era, like, and Vince later in the post commentaries, like, addressing this, but, like, what were people bleeding often?
There it is.
They were bleeding a lot more often. It's interesting that you bring up, like, it still wasn't allowed, though. Like, that's why if Brett were the one that would cut Austin, then if they got heat later, Brett would take the heat for it.
Oh,
right.
Oh,
Austin was like, well, you take the heat because you're a bigger name. Like, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to take the heat because I believe in this so much. But, like, it's funny that you say WrestleMania 20, because I believe that at WrestleMania 20, the tag match,
yeah,
with Mick Foley and The Rock versus Evolution
went way too hard. Like,
yeah, so the other way to get blood, either you take a little piece of a razor, you cut your forehead, or if you punch down, apparently, I don't do this, obviously. I just heard about it. But if you punch down on the eyebrow, it breaks the skin. Like, it's going to break every time. So the old school guys, that's called hard way. The old school guys would punch on the eyebrow, and they'd bust somebody open that way. So that way there was the audience wouldn't see a blade, the audience wouldn't see anything. They would just see, yo, that dude just got punched in the head and he's bleeding now. So that's what Mick Foley was going for in the WrestleMania 20 tag match. But Randy Orton is, like, you know, 24 years old or whatever he is in that match. Yeah. So he's never done, he wasn't wrestling in the 70s in the territories. He's 24. So, like, he's just sitting there punching Mick Foley in the face. He doesn't know how to do it. And Mick is just like, okay, stop.
It was crazy, man. Dude, that, it was The Rock and Mick Foley versus Randy Orton and Ric Flair with Batista in the corner or something like that. In an all-out just like bloodbath match. Like,
that's wild. That's wild. Because this had a lot of blood. And I like how Sam describes it, like Stone Cold pushing the blood up to keep it going. Because, yeah, there feels like moments like, is this guy going to faint? Like, is he going to just pass out from all this blood? Like,
well, you always know it's bad when he whips away from ringing out, from the ring bell, right? And it's, you see it on the mat already. As soon as he turns, it's on the mat. You're like, oh, no.
But they also, like, they're so hyper-aware. Like, the story is everything. Like, your question, like, he's literally bleeding to the point that you're worried about him passing out because that's what happens when you bleed too much. And guess where they're going? Guess what the finish is? Like, yeah, of course it's supposed to look like that. Of course you should feel that way, because at the end of this thing, in order for it to be effective, that suspension of disbelief has to be gone.
And it wasn't.
Yeah. And again, I think there's so many great lines. First off, of them going bending over backwards to make you feel at home. But Vince is like, we have doctors in attendance. That's what he says. We have doctors in attendance. Oh, that's great. I'm glad they're here somewhere in the building, right? But like, JR, Austin's a stud, JR. Austin said he was going to beat the hell out of Bret Hart, and that's what he's doing with the help of some steel. There is no quit in Steve Austin. And then there's like my favorite King line, because eventually it hasn't happened yet, right? It's coming up where King actually feuds with the Harts and goes and fucks with Stu Hart and all that jazz. King has a line where they cut to Stu Hart's concerned face. Bret's daddy goes, oh, even Stu woke up for this, because he's already old as hell at this point. He's getting older when he's getting
he had another good one. Put the camera on his mouth. I could read lips. Yeah. Just started laughing at that.
Two lines I loved. This is a war at WrestleMania. Simple line, nothing that special. The delivery of it with what we're seeing of them in the outside brawling, it felt like, oh my God, this really is beyond just like a normal match like this. And then my favorite one is, there will not be a winner here. Someone will come out a loser, but no one's winning here. It's like, damn, that's so true, man.
So, Tim, you said five.
I think it's a five. And like, yeah, there's some things that made me uncomfortable. There's some things that, you know,
it's just all good art should.
Whatever. 100%. Real talk. I feel like this is a weird way to put it, but I think it was worth it. Like, I think that whatever these men brought into this, it was clear they wanted to, and it was clear they did every single thing they set out to accomplish with this match. And that is so impressive for the lack of gimmicks and the lack of stuff that could have happened. You know, like, again, I wasn't familiar with the storyline. So at any moment, Ken Shamrock could have pulled some baloney. You know what I mean? Could have got involved, could have hit one of them, could have done. They didn't do that stuff. Like, this was a submission match. It felt so much more real than a normal wrestling match because of that. And every level up, the attempt at a steal of the finisher, like when Stone Cold like charges up and he starts to get it, like Bret in the sharpshooter.
And he does like this like smarmy ass last smile.
It's just so good. And like, we didn't get like a real stunner in this. You know what I mean? Like, there's little things here and there, but there wasn't like a, oh my God, Stone Cold did his finisher. There's something about that feels so special to me, because by the end of it, it's like Stone Cold gave everything he freaking had. Like, it made the blood and all that stuff feel even more real than it really was.
Sure. Mike, what's your rating?
Yeah, I'm giving it a 5 out of 5. This was a fun time. This isn't something I will show my mother or a first-time watcher. I will ease them into it, like you said with your wife. But this is one that everyone should see, because it is really good storytelling, as you guys have discussed.
Sam?
5 out of 5. I will show my mother. I will show my wife. Anybody that doesn't understand that they're watching one of the greatest American stories ever told, I have no tolerance for whatsoever.
I, of course, go 5 out of 5 as well. I think even with camera cuts or whatever, it's like everything they do, right, and they make happen. I think there's an interesting one. We're going to the finish, obviously, that brings it in, right? And we've already talked a little bit about it, but I want to bring it in. Mr. Hawks in the live chat, watching with his Kind of Funny membership, says, does the ending with Austin passing out work without the bleeding, Mike?
No, probably not, right? Because how would he pass out?
There's pain.
Yeah, it's got to have it, right? I think you're right on that. When you come around and you talk about the story of itself, if not, if he doesn't bleed like that, then I expect him to tap. And I don't think that's what they wanted out of this. They want to make it seem like, oh, you had to absolutely kill this man to make him stop. And I think they conveyed that very well.
Yeah. Right.
Totally.
Yeah. I think that that's the argument for it, right? Where like into it enhancing a story or something. I think if it was just a non-bloody Stone Cold Steve Austin just laying down on the mat, it would have been kind of a flat finish, Sam. Do you agree?
Yeah. So without the blood, it would feel like wrestling. And with the blood, it felt like real life.
Yep.
Great way to put it. So the finish itself, though, let's get into it and actually give a thing there. I mean, this is a 5 out of 5 finish for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, for my book, I'm just going through, and again, it goes so far beyond it, right? I like the choking with the cable, right? That's Austin's big move. Then a bell to the head.
And just, they set up the bell earlier, too.
They did.
I love that reveal there at the end of like hitting him with it. And his bell is rung.
Yeah. Come on. And then right into it in a similar way to what you were talking about, the stunners, right? Even though the stunner and Stone Cold are still getting off the ground and not being this thing, the same thing of the sharpshooter, where it's like he goes in and locks in the sharpshooter finally, but years from now, as we continue to go, the sharpshooter is such a iconic finish, right? That it is like there's like drama to this. Felt like a fight. This felt like a back and forth, and it felt like this is something you're gonna get in and lock it in and to get it in. And then Austin's sell, you know what I mean? The pushing in the blood, sure, but just the vocal performance, yeah. The screaming.
But even not the final sharpshooter, but the one before it that Austin kind of fights through.
Yeah,
I was watching this and out loud, I was like, get up, get up, get up, and I'm like, why am I this into a match that I know the result of? But like they got me, man.
Sam, what'd you think of the finish?
I mean, 5 out of 5, easy. Yeah. Like it's incredible because it's effective in every way, right? You have this amazing double turn that's been built throughout the entire match, but then met with this climax where, as a human being, like you have to boo Bret Hart. You have no choice. If you're a human with a soul of any kind, you have to boo Bret, and there's no way you aren't cheering Steve Austin after that. What makes this match as a submission match special is that most submission matches are very hold-based, you know, trying to get those submission holds on and just wear down limbs. But because this was Austin and he doesn't do submission matches, it just became that what you guys brought up earlier, that thing of just fighting and fighting and fighting until somebody quit. There's an old expression in wrestling called getting over without going over. And that means getting over in the sense that like you're more popular with the audience. The audience buys into your story more now than they did. Without going over, and going over means winning. Like traditionally we think, okay, well, if you want the audience to buy into your character more, have that character win the match, and then they like that guy more. This is one of those perfect scenarios where not only do they like him more even though he lost, you would argue that they like him more because he lost. Mm-hmm.
100%. And again, the announcers do such a great job driving this home, right? So when it's all over, right? Because JR is like, he's passed out from the pain. Vince makes sure to bring up intestinal fortitude. JR, a man's man, I'll tell you that. And then Vince eventually, I've never seen anyone so gutsy. And this is like right after he stuns Mike Chioda or whatever in the middle of the ring. He's beating up the ref to get out of there.
Which, again, like this is the, you know, 2024 Tim looking at this and like having the moment where after the match is done and Bret gets up and Ken's looking at Stone Cold laying on the mat, I'm like, is this man okay? Like, there's a lot of blood. Like, is he sure they did it? He performed, he did the thing. Is he okay, or did we go too far? And for the next scene we see is him getting up and then stunning the ref. It's like, is he actually hurt? Like, is he literally in a daze that he's just attacking people?
Yeah.
And the way that the commentary sold it, it's like, I feel like they did a good job of being like, no, we're in control here. We got this. Yeah. But there was like a little bit of fear there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mikey?
Good. Fantastic finish. That was a lot of fun. I think the sharpshooter might go down as one of my top 3 all-time submission holds that I've ever seen in the WWE, right up there with Kurt Angle's ankle lock, because, man, I see that, I go wild for it. So yeah, the sharpshooter's up there for sure for me.
Okay, 5 out of 5 from you?
Hell yeah.
Then we get to overall. 5 out of 5.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, like, you can nitpick, you can give a 3 to this or whatever. It's like, no, this is a 5. This is what wrestling is capable of, I think, with you can't just put any 2 top people together and have a match like this. It had to be these 2 top people, and they had some a goal, and they achieved it.
Yeah. Is that why it stands the test of time, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, it's the only match on that entire WrestleMania show that is worth kind of anything. No offense to anybody else who participated in WrestleMania 13, but like that match alone makes this an incredibly important WrestleMania, and it wasn't the main event. I mean, I think it sets Bret Hart up for the best run of his WWE career. It launches Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, this is, it's so poetic because one year after WrestleMania 13 is WrestleMania 14 when Austin finally wins the title, and then everything is just off to the races. But yeah, I mean, you know, we could give the entrance a 4 out of 5, but the match is a 6 out of 5. So it ends up being perfect.
Well, we've gone through and reviewed this match, which means we still have to rank the match. We have to check in with Cool Greg. But before any of that, I need to remind you about the Kinda Funny membership. If you pick up the Kinda Funny membership on YouTube or Patreon, of course you could get this show ad-free. Of course you could watch us record this show live as we record it, just like DG Mayer is, FSI is, and Mr. Hawks are. And of course you get those benefits for all the other podcasts. And of course you could get the vlog series Greg Way. But you're not using your membership benefits right now, so here's a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Shady Rays, an independent sunglasses brand that has over 300,000 five-star reviews. They are on a mission to match affordability with durability, making top-quality shades accessible to everyone. They have tons of styles and colors to pick from, so finding the perfect polarized shades is a breeze. Get ready for a whole new level of clarity with Shady Rays Pro Polarized Lenses. Here at Kinda Funny, we all love wearing our Shady Rays, whether it is Tim looking dope doing his Pokemon Go walks or Joey just looking fantastic in her tangle-free shades. If your shades go MIA or take a hit, don't sweat it. They've got lost and broken protection, so you never have to worry. You're covered from day one. And if you don't love your shades, exchange or return them for free within 30 days. Exclusively for y'all, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal of the season. Head to ShadyRays.com and use the code KF20 for $20 off each pair of polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself the shades rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people.
Shout out to Factor for sponsoring this episode. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Joey has been loving her Factor meals because every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. Factor meals are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. And Factor is flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. A ton of us here at Kinda Funny have been so thankful for Factor since we've been in the new studio, and you can too. Head to factormeals.com/kindoffunny50 and use code kindoffunny50 to get 50% off. That's code kindoffunny50 at factormeals.com/kindoffunny50 to get 50% off.
This episode of WrestleMania Ranked is brought to you by WWE 2K24. Step into the ring and finish your story with new match types like ambulance and casket matches, a roster of more than 200 superstars and legends, new career mode experiences, and so much more. The latest installment of the franchise features several advancements, including 2K Showcase of the Immortals. 40 years in the making, WWE 2K24's Showcase mode puts players in control, playing through the most iconic moments in WrestleMania history, as 2K's distinctive slingshot tech seamlessly morphs from gameplay to live-action footage and back again for the most immersive WrestleMania video game experience to date. Finish your story with Standard Edition cover superstar, the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, or Deluxe Edition cover superstars Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair when WWE 2K24 launches on March 5th with early access and March 8th worldwide. Pre-order WWE 2K24 and receive 1 month of Peacock, US only, and WWE 2K23 digital only to play while you wait. All right, before we rank this, we have to go to our special segment, One Man Gang Gang, where Cool Greg comes in and gives his thoughts on it. Cool Greg, what did you think of Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin?
What's up, everybody? Thanks for having me again. I really like this guest. He speaks as if like he knows more than he's telling us, and I appreciate that. So, 5 out of 5 guest, 5 out of 5 match. Yeah, this is crazy. You guys are killing this episode too. Like, I'm agreeing with everything.
Okay, great. Okay, good. We did well by Cool Greg. That's all that matters. All right, great. That's the seal of approval, Sam. You got to get that on your Twitter bio right there. Cool Greg, because you're 5 out of 5 guest.
5 out of 5, baby. 5 out of 5.
So currently, this is episode 7. That means our ranking list goes like this: best to worst. But whatever you want to say. The number one match we've ranked so far is Rock versus Hogan at WrestleMania 18. Number 2 was Taker versus HBK at WrestleMania 25. Ooh. Number 3 was Becky versus Bianca at WrestleMania 38. Number 4 was Kofi versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 35. Number 5 was Bayley versus Charlotte versus Sasha versus Nia Jax at WrestleMania 33. And at the bottom of our list, number 6, JBL versus Finley at WrestleMania 24. Thank you once again, JBL, for picking that match. Sam, you're the guest. Where would you rank this match on our current list?
Man.
Yeah.
It's easily top 3. See, I personally would rank it above Rock Hogan.
Wow.
But below Undertaker Shawn.
I see what you're saying.
And
wow.
So that's what's...
Yeah.
That's
welcome to the in-review conundrum, yeah. Where there's something you don't agree with on the list. Like, well, how do I rank it then?
Yeah. I mean, it's top 3 and it ain't 3.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, look, I can't say anything about that. I got to put it in the spot where I think it's better than the match that is directly below it. So it's number 1.
Wow, number 1. Okay. I would put it at number 2. I would put it below Rock Hogan, above Taker,
you got
HBK.
Shawn and Taker at number 3 now?
That's what, hey man, I don't make the list. Well, I do. But I mean, the cards fall where they fall, Sam. All right, I'm going to see what I got to do.
See, Greg, I'm jumping in here. You kind of using the same logic. I'll put it at number 3. Because I feel like I can't put it above Shawn Taker here. And again, I think all 3 of these matches, we're talking about 3 different styles, different things, and all 3 of them perfectly achieved what they were setting out to do. I respect the hell out of the Hogan Rock match for what it is, but I feel like the Shawn Michaels Undertaker match like went even further with this. And I mean, this was just beautiful for everything it was trying for. It's so hard, but I kind of feel like that puts it on Mike to,
man, you have to decide, the newbie Mike. Of all people. Man, Sam is here, and he gave it a great review. Greg and Tim are here. They're talking about it. Yeah, it's interesting to me because this falls for me 2 or 3. I really love what Rock and Hogan was. I love the vibe of what we took from that. When I think of the Taker match, it's interesting. I don't know if this is better than that because, man, I got some really awesome moments in that. But we also went into the crowd, and it was mayhem in the crowd. And then we had a lot of blood, and he put him in the sharpshooter. I think for this, for me, I'm going to go with Tim. This is number 3. I like Taker over this.
Wow. You offended Sam. He'll never come back.
Sam, you're the best. Don't listen to him.
That means, ladies and gentlemen, number 1, Rock Hogan, WrestleMania 18. Number 2, Taker, HBK, WrestleMania 25. Number 3, Austin versus Hart, WrestleMania 13. Sam, why does that piss you off so much?
It's just, I get it, but Rock Hogan is not telling the story that Austin and Bret are telling.
You're correct.
Rock Hogan are already coming in as icons, and it's just 2 icons meeting. You got Bret at the crossroads of his career. He is an icon from a bygone era and has to figure out where he fits in. You got this villain who thinks that he should be at the top of the card. The audience is starting to believe it, but he's never gotten the opportunity. These guys are not in the main event. They're in the middle of the show, and they have to do something that is literally going to last forever. Rock and Hogan could have gone in there and just gone into whatever. They could have done anything, and it would have been at the top of the list. They could have done anything.
And they didn't do anything, though. They made magic, Sam, all right? And that's what they did. And that's a match you could show anybody. You don't have to worry about it being grossed out by blood.
I told you, I'll show Bret Austin.
It's because you're a psychopath, Sam Roberts. You're a psychopath, all right?
Normal people wouldn't do that.
I love it. No.
Whatever.
Believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, you are 3 weeks removed from WrestleMania 40. That means 3 episodes left.
It can't come soon enough.
Yeah.
I'm so jazzed up watching Raw and SmackDown every week. I'm counting down the days, I'm counting down the nights, and I'm just begging to get to it. I'm so excited, Greg. I can't wait.
Well, we'll be there shortly. That means 3 episodes left of WrestleMania Ranked. To find out what we are watching for next week's homework, we turn to the last outlaw, Jeff Jarrett.
Hey, slap nuts. And yeah, you, Miller. I've been requested, and somebody from the team on the WrestleMania review show. It's a highly successful show, which I have no idea how it actually is if you're a part of it. But hey, maybe content's king and you're not really part of the content. But anyway, Miller, you little slap nut, I'd like to slap the taste out of your mouth today just to make me feel better. Anyhow, down to business. You want a match to review from the old Last Outlaw, old Double J, Jeff Jarrett, the Hall of Famer? Let's go back to WrestleMania 11, Hartford, Connecticut. Man, we're going deep into the archives. I think you're going to be surprised. We had lots of crossover appeal in the early days. Salt and Pepper were there. Lawrence Taylor, my buddy Mongo McMichael, first time I met him. You know, Brett, Sean, Diesel, the list. But top to bottom, I thought it was a hell of a show. And me and the bad guy, Razor Ramon, got it on. X-Pac, Six-Pac, 1-2-3 Kid in those days was in his corner. The Road Dog was in mine. Stay tuned. I think for a WrestleMania match, an Intercontinental title match, you may be surprised at the finish. Miller, get your ass off the cameras. You're killing this show. Roll the tape.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for your pick. Mike, you get your wish. You're going even further back into WrestleMania.
Further back is wild. I did not think we were going to go even further back, but I am excited. You know, Jeff has left a very lasting impact on me, taught me how to strut, and so I'm excited to check him out.
I'm an inch shorter thanks to the guitar shot. Yeah, Jeff's lasting impact on me as well. Sam, you won't be here next week. Do you remember this match? You have anything to toss in there?
100%. I need you guys, especially because if you guys weren't watching at the time, you need to watch like really, really closely, really carefully, and you need to watch a couple of other matches in the context of everything else that was going on. Because Jeff Jarrett, I know, Greg, that you guys don't get along great.
We have some bad history, but I respect what he did, you know.
Good, good. Because if you could take that stuff out, some of the matches that Jeff Jarrett had in that era are phenomenal. The Razor match is one of them. He has a match with Shawn Michaels at the second In Your House that is just like a forever match. The story, like, it's not, they're not talked about nearly often enough. And Jeff Moore gets it put in the context of the country music star and the strut and everything like that. But just really sit down and soak in Razor and Jeff Jarrett, because it's a lot of what Jeff was doing then, especially with the Click guys, very underrated stuff and very more ahead of its time than people realize.
All right. Well, there you go. Cool. Very excited for that. Sam, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people keep up with you?
Just follow me on social media, NotSam across the board. You can go to NotSam.com. And, of course, NotSam Wrestling, the podcast, comes out across podcast platforms and YouTube every Monday and then inevitably throughout the week as well.
Emergency podcast have to happen.
Emergency podcast.
Sam, get some sleep. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, that is another episode of Kinda Funny Screencast Special WWE WrestleMania Ranked. Remember, each and every week leading into WrestleMania 40, we're reviewing and ranking a match handpicked by our wrestling friends. If you love what we do, please get that Kinda Funny membership on Patreon or YouTube to get all of our shows ad-free, watch us record them live, and get the daily exclusive show. You get the Kinda Funny Screencast for free with ads and without the exclusive content on YouTube and podcast services around the globe. Until next time, burn it down!